following takes place between 8 a.m. and 9 a.m.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to FPC Radio Live. It is Thursday. It is not the 7th of April. I have not updated the date at the top of the screen. It is the 9th. That's right, folks. I am behind the 8 ball here. Actually, yes, technically, I'm behind the 8th of April ball here. So ignore the 4-7-20 at the top of the screen. I will be fixing that momentarily. In the meantime, of course, you can see I'm not the only one on camera. We're bringing in, once again, one of our favorite third man in right here, you know, a little hockey term right there, Mr. Kyle Center. Kyle, how are we doing today?
Well, I'm doing pretty great. Good to be on.
Yeah, good. Hey, like I said, you're a company man. I'm telling you, I've been searching far and wide my entire house, every corner, every crevice. I can't find any of my shirts. I don't know what happened. I can't even find my Pasternak shirt. Okay, anything is possible. You know, I'm disappointed. It's somewhere, but I got to search for it. But Of course, we're not the only two on this program. You don't see his face moving, but it is at the top of the screen. He is Mr. Rhode Island himself. He is the king of the Northeast. Mike, how are we doing on this fine Thursday morning?
La, la, la. I'm doing well, my friend. Always great to join you and Kyle here on the microphone, and looking forward to talking some... Well, pretty much anything that we want to right now. I mean, there's not a whole lot of active sports going on, but there are a whole lot of active stories, and I think that we'll definitely have some good content for you today.
No, absolutely. And, of course, we were not on the air yesterday. That was by choice. We had talked about it on Tuesday, but we were obviously anticipating the Tom Brady interview on the Howard Stern show. That obviously happened yesterday right at 8 a.m., so I made the executive decision, great movie, by the way, to just say no to the show because, again, you know, the importance of being able to listen to that live and everything like that, take notes, you know, it was pretty key to the job. So we took the Wednesday off, you know, we took a mini vacation there, and good thing because that interview lasted over 2 hours, and you know, it was fantastic. So we're gonna talk about that. We're gonna kind of go back a little bit and talk about the All Decade team, which we began to talk about on Tuesday. We're gonna get Kyle's perspective on that, and then of course the news yesterday, or at least the prognostication yesterday of potentially not having football till February until November at the very earliest. So we're going to kind of jump in on all that. So real quick, Mike, you and I have talked extensively on this program, on Locked On Patriots, on off the air, in DMs, everything about this whole Tom Brady situation. And I know obviously there's a segment of Patriots fans that are just over it, and you know there's others that are, you know, obviously still fascinated with Tom, because again, he was the quarterback of New England for 20 years and all that. So this interview was fantastic. I I'm a little biased because I love Tom Brady and I love Howard Stern, two of my childhood I'm not going to say heroes, because that's again, maybe when I was a child that was more the case. Obviously now, two people that I respect immensely, one obviously Brady being for what he does on the field, and look, I mean, we sit here and do the show every day. I do a lot of talking on other programs, as does Mike, as does Kyle, the FPC Fantasy Podcast, and the Full Press Packers Podcast, of course. Check them out both out on the FPC app. So I've drawn a lot of inspiration from Howard, just the way he's, you know, obviously just had such an amazing, successful career as a radio jockey and done, obviously, things that, you know, that broke down walls, all that stuff. And look, you know, he's not what he was a couple decades ago. People change. People, you know, get older. His motivations are, and this isn't a slight against him. This is more or less just the evolution of how things go. And what hasn't changed is how fantastic and how, yeah, pretty much just how fantastic of an interviewer he is. And, you know, it was just, honestly, it was a blast to listen to it. I thought he got Tom to open up a little bit. You know, you heard a little bit more of the vulgar language out of Tom. You know, and again, I wasn't necessarily surprised about some of it because, again, you know, Mike and I have obviously paid very close attention and studied his career, and we know, obviously not personally, but we know him as well as you can from the outside looking in. A lot of this vibed with his personality and what we know who he is. So the biggest thing that I took away from it was, and I'm going to word it the way it should have been worded, because a lot of these things were taken out of context, very predictably, you know, especially from the Boston media. But he had said that he had a feeling, the first inkling that he had that he was not going to be with the Patriots was the beginning of last season. And, you know, a lot of people took that as, oh, he knew he was leaving. He already made up his mind. He quit on the team. Blah. I saw some of that. Blah, 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 blah. All that nonsense. And that's just not true. He basically, what he was trying to express was, he saw the situation with his contract. He saw the situation the Patriots were in terms of what they had to do to put together a good team, the money that they had available to them in, you know, for this upcoming season and seasons afterwards. And he just basically said he thought he saw the writing on the wall. And look, he's a smart guy. He's been around the business for quite some time. And, you know, I think, you know, that's all it was. It wasn't an admission of, you know what, I made up my mind last August that I wasn't going to come. That was it. No, it was, he's realistic. He kind of saw the situation unfolding in front of him, and that was that. So Mike, was that the same impression that you got out of that? Because again, we saw so many different theories or at least opinions out of that, and a lot of them were off base because they were reading quote one or quote two out of context. Mike?
Yeah, almost exactly the same. I would say almost exactly the same. I mean, look, anything Tom Brady says is going to be amplified. Mm-hmm. He's one of the most high-profile athletes in all of professional sports, really, I think, across the landscape. And to think that his comments are not going to be interpreted, or you're not going to try to read tea leaves or any type of hidden messages in like some sort of cryptext from the Da Vinci Code, I think you put the other day, it's ridiculous, because you know that's going to happen. It shouldn't happen, but it does. Look, bottom line, I was not floored by any of the information that Tom shared yesterday. I was surprised by his candor. I think a lot of people don't see that side of him that often. It's very difficult to let that side out, especially when you're in a media market like New England, where everything is amplified. You saw that yesterday. A lot of the stuff that he shared was panned by a lot of Patriots fans, a lot of Patriots media. And I think a lot of it was, well, why didn't you open up like this when you were in New England? Well, there's a very good reason for that, because it would have been used and twisted and molded into something that just simply was not there. And you saw a lot of that yesterday. My big takeaway from that was his relationship with Bill Belichick and the mutual respect that these two entities have for one another. I think you're going to see a lot of, you know, written into that. There shouldn't be. Anything that I've ever known in Tom from covering him the last 3 years is that he says what's on his mind. He's not the type of guy that minces words. He's not the type of guy that will voluntarily or knowingly mislead anybody. That was another thing that really struck me as being very disingenuous, is the amount of people that wanted to think that Tom was hypocritical for saying, oh, well, I knew last year that this was probably going to be my last year. He never definitively said, I made up my mind right then and there. I knew I was dead man walking. I knew I was a lame duck. He did not say that. He says it wasn't a final decision until he talked to Robert Kraft. I think he prepared himself mentally for it all year long, went into the off season, saw that nothing had changed, and then made the decision that at this point, well, it's more of the same. This is what I'm going to do. I'm going to move on, and I'm going to take my business elsewhere, essentially. Mm-hmm. And Bill Belichick, and he acknowledged that Bill Belichick has a job to do in trying to prepare this franchise for the future. And I think in a lot of ways, this was the break that I think both sides needed. So Yeah, I was not surprised by anything. I mean, if people, you know, the snark machine is going to be out in full force trying to tell you that Brady said this, or Brady, you know, took a backhanded swipe at Belichick there. I didn't see any of that. If you're a Tom Brady fan, I highly recommend checking this interview out. Again, there's some heartwarming moments where he talks about his marriage. I thought he opened up very, you know, deeply there in a way that we've never seen before. Talked about his family, talked about his early life, some of his exploits in high school, which I thought were funny. Some back and forths that he had with his teammates and injuries and whatnot. There is, you know, one out there. It was a family show this morning, so I'm not going to get into what that was. But listen to the interview or read the transcript, and you'll find it funny. But all in all, I just thought it was a great interview. I really and truly did. I thought Stern did a very good job. I thought Tom did a very good job in answering him. You know, I mean, Stern is not the easiest guy to sit across from the microphone, virtually, albeit, and fire back. He didn't shy away from any questions. He did not answer any questions. So all in all, I thought it was a great interview. But don't let my whole takeaway from this in the from a public's eye is don't let some of the snarky narratives out there deter you from what this interview was. It was an open, honest, emotional dump, I think, for Tom. And I think he needed to do that. It's probably a cathartic exercise that he went through to get himself ready for life in Tampa Bay.
Yeah, and
I also would like to point out that his Wi-Fi is just as weak as mine down in Tampa. So, you know, Derek Jeter and I think, have the same internet provider. I'll be very honest with you.
I'm guessing you don't have the same size house, though. No offense, I'm just guessing that you don't have the kind of space
he definitely has a few more rooms. It's a little bit more palatial than my place is, but I guarantee it'll match a cleanliness for cleanliness. So I'll stand by that.
Well, don't worry. I'm looking.
See, Kyle's giving me the thumbs up. He understands it.
I'm looking into buying a boat. So I can go hang out in his backyard, as he mentioned, because I know exactly where his house is, as sad as it is, because I've been down in that area. It's a little peninsula or a little inlet of right south of Tampa, like the main part of Tampa. It's you know, right in the Bay Area. It's not in the actual there's a part of the water, obviously, that separates St. Petersburg, and then directly across there's Tampa and whatnot. There's another separate little body of water on the other side of that little inlet. That's where his house is. It's not too far from me. Obviously, I've already driven by there 25 times. I mean, I haven't. I've just thought about it. No, it's a nice place to live. Again, I've been down here for a while. You know, he mentioned it before. It's nice to be in the warm weather. It's nice, you know, to obviously, you know, for him to be able to play a lot of games that are probably going to be a little bit more, you know, Drew Brees-like, you know, something Drew Brees has benefited from quite some time is nicer weather and indoor stadiums, you know, with Atlanta and obviously New Orleans, you know, twice, you know, playing them twice a year. So, well, look, I enjoyed it as obviously a Brady fan, as a Howard Stern fan. It's two things that, you know, really two worlds that collided that were great for me. And like you said, Mike, the thing is like what I took away from this was there's so much mutual respect between him, Belichick, and Kraft. And as Brady stated, you know, Bill has a job to do, and he understands that. His job is to prepare for the future. And he even said it himself. Like, and this is kind of the thing that we've talked about for so long was, you know, especially around the Jimmy G stuff was, no, Tom didn't go and tell Robert Kraft to trade Jimmy G. He didn't force that, like, in that manner. How he forced it was, and as Tom said, was he broke down walls in the sense that, you know, the norm, i.e., you know, when you're 38, 39, you start to decline rapidly. He broke down that barrier. That was no longer an issue because, you know, again, he's going on 43, and I can sit here and still make a case that he's, at the very least, a top five quarterback in this league. I mean, I'll get a lot of blowback from it from a lot of, you know, box score warriors, but the bottom line is the guy is still one of the very best, and I can sit here and argue and say he still has the best mind. Kyle's putting up a four. I like it. I can live with that. I can live with that. I've been getting a little crazy.
And that's only because Aaron Rodgers is at three.
Yeah. Okay, we'll save that debate for another day. But we like having you on the show. Just remember, I have the power to cut off your mic. So no, but again, it was a fantastic listen. If you haven't heard the whole interview, I know there's clips up there. I try to tweet as many as the many of the big pointed quotes as I could throughout the show. And if you follow the @FPC_Buccaneers account on Twitter, there are some clips from the actual interview up there about him talking about, you know, just whatever different topic. So, but if you want to listen to the whole interview, SiriusXM, they're running a free preview until May 15th or whatever. So you can just hop on their site, search Howard 100, and it'll come right up there. So, Kyle, I got to ask you, for someone obviously who's not a Patriots fan, did you listen to some of the interview or parts of it, or?
No, I actually, when you told me that we weren't going to record tomorrow, I just went back to bed.
Oh, okay. Well, that's fine.
I'm not necessarily a Stern fan. I great respect, as you mentioned, great interviewer. I'm actually quite amazed that he's still able to, even in these times, not being in the same room as his guests and doing it over internet, that still comes through, it seems.
Yep.
I guess the one thing I'll comment on is you mentioned some people were saying Brady gave up on the Patriots. If Brady gave up on the Patriots, he's not going to throw a pick six at the end of that Titans game. He in the wild card. He was throwing that because he was trying to win, right? He thought that was the best play. Obviously, Vrabel's defense fooled him, but you know he would have gone out in a better manner than that if he was giving up on the spot.
So did Mohamed Sanu's effort, by the way. That fooled him as well, because let's just put it this way: he did not fight through that ball, and that was I'm going to give him some of the blame on that one, but. Yeah, again, it's a foolish narrative. There's a I love using this word because I don't know why. I do, but there's a schism happening amongst quote unquote Patriots fans, and it's fairly entertaining to me because, you know, half of the group is okay, we're done with him. Let's, you know, he gave up on us. He's not a member of this team. We're going to tell you how to be a fan. And then there's the other half that are like, okay, look, we're obviously Patriots fans, but we just watched Tom Brady for 20 years. This isn't just another guy that has come through an organization. And I got to ask you, because this is slightly different. But Brett Favre spent a significant amount of time with the Packers. And then obviously went to the Jets, but ultimately went to the Vikings. So it's a little bit different. But speaking about his time with the Jets, and now again his departure was a little bit different. But what was the feeling amongst Packers fans when it came to Brett Favre and him leaving? And was there this okay, he's gone, we hate him type mentality, or was it like, look, we love Brett Favre. You know, it's unfortunate that he's moving on, but you know, we wish him luck. And you know, obviously, I mean, again, this is before he went to the Vikings, because division rivals, that changes things. But what was the mentality amongst Packers fans when it comes to that?
Well, I mean, you speak about that, and the hatred in the NFC North is real, just like it is in the AFC North and tons of other divisions as well. But you know, when you get a Vikings quarterback come in and he's actually getting cheers and people are actually applauding him, I think that speaks a long way. Like, you know, he didn't get, I mean, obviously there's going to be boos at every stadium, but for the most part in those Vikings games, even though that he beat the Packers and maybe more boos at the end after they'd lost. Yeah, but when he first came in the stadium, it was cheers. It was respect for, okay, you gave us a Super Bowl. First time since the Lombardi era. It's so long that they were starved for, you know, playoff success, but really just any type of sustained success. And Favre brought that. And I think, it's tough for me to speak, being hip in Canada. Obviously, I don't have really a pulse of what's going on in Green Bay. And I was so young at the time, I wasn't as in tune with football as I am now. But from what I remember, I think it was gratitude for everything that he had done. And I think there was a bit of hesitation, actually, with Aaron Rodgers at first. Naturally so. We didn't know that he would become what he became. And, you know, 2008 is, while he, you know, wasn't horrible, it was definitely a far cry away from what became, you know, in the 2010 to 2017 week five era, right? Like, to me, I, you know, maybe we'll see it now, but I still haven't seen any better quarterback play, really. Just the way he's, you know, the throwing on the run, the athleticism, the really strong arm. I still attest, during that period, he was the best deep ball thrower in the NFL.
Oh, it was beautiful.
So, but But we didn't know that at first. So I think I was actually more hesitation of, ooh, are we sure we're ready to replace him? I mean, Favre's still good to go. So I think there was more that than, he's leaving, boo him. I mean, because it seemed like he wanted to come back to the Packers, but they said, nah, you're coming back as a backup. We're ready to go in the Aaron Rodgers era. So I think fans also recognized that it wasn't necessarily Favre's choice not to be there.
Well, and if I remember correctly, because, I was pretty, obviously it was 2007, 2008, as you said, 2007 I was 21, so I was paying attention. I was pretty in tune, I guess, with just everything going on in the NFL, because, again, I didn't have much else going on. I was just a big football fan. But, the years preceding that were, there was a lot of questions. Favre played the retirement card for a while. So I think that ultimately forced Green Bay's hand, where they were like, look, you're talking about retirement every year. You know, we got to make a decision. We have this guy we drafted in the first round. He's sat for 3 years already. We got to make a move. And you're already talking about retirement, so we're going to go with the young guy. So I think that was part of the situation here. Obviously different with Brady. He's been steadfast in saying that he wants to play to at least 45. And the more he talks, I feel like he's even opening up the door a little bit to play beyond that if he's still at playing at a high level. I mean, again, I don't know, because, again, like Mike mentioned, he spoke pretty intimately about his marriage and what really was the cause of him missing OTAs. And, if you're up in the Boston area, if you pay attention to the Boston media, there was, 16 different theories as to why Tom didn't attend OTAs the last couple of years. And a lot of them revolved around him just not wanting to work, quote unquote, and doing things completely opposite of his character. When it turns out that, his wife basically was like, look, you need to pick up the slack at home. That means spending more time at home, spending more time with the kids. And look, this is when, life collides with sport. We tend to separate those two entities, but in reality, I mean, these are people too. These are people with relationships, with families, and Tom's a family guy, and he speaking about his own family, obviously values that very much, and he needed a wake-up call. And I think missing OTA, spending that little bit of extra time with the family, maybe doing less promotional stuff outside of the day-to-day football stuff, I think that was the compromise he needed to make with his wife, with Giselle, to keep doing what he was doing. And I think, obviously, those are little sacrifices he's going to have to keep making as he continues to play over these next couple of years. But it's funny to me, because you just get a lot of animosity, I guess, right off the bat. People are sick of him, and I think Mike put it well. I think a lot of people, especially Boston media folks, just have a bit of a jealousy that, look, Tom opened up to Howard and not them. And I don't blame them, because, again, there's a lot of people in that Boston media circle that are more gotcha and looking for that negative slant. And, they'll try to twist words and get him to slip up. And, he's a smart guy. After a while, he's just going to say, why? Especially after all the Deflategate stuff and especially with the national ESPN media, he kind of just, I would never imagine him going on, any one of those programs and, First Take. I mean, you got to know, you'll never see him on that program sitting there opening up with Max Kellerman. And I mean, maybe you'll talk to Stephen A. Smith one day, but so
imagine first things first.
Oh, yeah. Jesus.
But I think that's part of it, is the respect he has for Stern. Right? I mean, this isn't just a football guy. This isn't just a sports guy. This is basically right now the go-to guy for interviews, mm-hmm. right? So for Brady to give such a detailed and personal interview, who else would that be with? Like, who else would he be willing to kind of put that on the line for on such a big scale so everyone could see it, right? I think then part of this is he wants everyone to know the story too, yep. right? He's tired of all these false narratives. So he's setting mm-hmm. the record straight in a medium in which it's going to transcend football. Everyone will be, probably talk about this interview. I mean, we've spent about a half an hour almost talking about this.
close, getting there. But, well, and that's the thing, too, and you brought up a great point, because he specifically mentioned that there was a lot of just, again, false narratives about him and Belichick's relationship. And he was very adamant about, he was very adamant that a lot of these perceptions were just flat out wrong. This idea that they hated each other, this, that, and the other. No, I think there's a just a massive amount of mutual respect and admiration for one another. And look, he said what a lot of us have said, that he could not have been himself without Bill, and vice versa. Bill would not be who he is without Tom. I mean, this was, you know, again, this is one of the reasons why something like this will probably never happen again in the NFL, because it was just a perfect joining at the right time between two people. Bill being at his age, in his mid to late 40s, and Tom obviously coming in, and just, again, the timing was perfect. It gelled, and, you know, like he said, their mentality is so similar when it comes to football and winning, and their philosophy. It was perfect. And, you know, look, after 20 years, it's Tom was looking for a new challenge. Bill obviously has to keep the team in mind. And again, this isn't anything different. This is who Bill is. This is who Tom is. And I think they're so in tune with one another. They both realized what was in front of them. And I think it was a fairly mutual and a pretty, you know, a lackluster, not lackluster, but drama-free separation. I think a lot of people, you know, the cynics out there in the media were hoping for, you know, a lot of dirt and a lot of stories. And I think they're going to be sorely disappointed over the long haul, because, again, I don't think you're going to get that. And Mike can, you know, attest to that. I mean, that's just how the media culture is in Boston. And I think, you know, a lot of them are, you know, just a little hurt that it wasn't them. But again, like Kyle said,
agree.
Go ahead.
You know, I mean, it's a situation where, and it's unfortunate to say, but it was a pretty happy day among some media members when Tom Brady announced that he was going to leave Boston. It was, oh, look at the stories. Look at the endless narratives. Look at the Belichick versus Brady rifts. I mean, you know, you talk about some of the radio in this town, and they were absolutely brimming over with enthusiasm when they found this out, because every single game that the Patriots play this year, well, would Tom have made that throw? Would Tom have done this? Would Tom have thrown that interception? No, he wouldn't have. Well, what they failed to tell you is that the year before, they were cutting this guy up like you can't imagine, calling him noodle arm, dead arm. He's not this. He's not that. He's a shell of himself. He's not going to be able to do it. So, you know, there's this disingenuous type of, I guess the best way for me to put it is elitism, when it comes to the narrative that a lot of the local media and national media wants to set when it comes to Tom Brady and the Patriots. The truth is that it's probably a lot more benign and a lot more on the surface than it was. I said this on Locked On Patriots yesterday. Tom Brady basically said, look, bottom line, it was time for me to move on. It was time for Bill Belichick to do what he had to do and move his team forward. Both sides got it. That's it. Bottom line, no hidden messages here. But yet you will find the hidden messages extracted. You already saw, like I said earlier, the snark machine to come out and to be able to you know, twist that narrative into a story that they can craft into a 3 or 4 part epilogue that just, you know, basically agonizes over every little detail. But essentially what they're doing is they're just using one piece of fact and stretching the narrative around it to support it. I don't know how much journalism that really is, but you know what? I'll get off my soapbox.
I was going to say, Seth Wickersham's ears are burning right now.
Just thinking about. Well, you know. Yeah, exactly. Well, again, you know, we're talking about, you know, 3 a.m. breakfast in Foxborough, even though that's logistically impossible. But we'll get, well, you know what, I'm not going to get into that. I promised you guys I'll be good. Angry Mike will stifle himself. Kyle, I really wanted to give you kudos on what you said about Stern and about Brady choosing the medium that he did. I think that was a very strategic move on his part, and I think you said it eloquently, so I'm not going to dance all over it and basically, elongated or wreck it, because I think you said it perfectly. But other than to say I completely agree with you, it says a lot about what Tom went through, I think, in the sports media world, that he chose the venue that he did, and I think he chose the smart one. Again, like Kyle said, it got him into a wide variety and a pretty big audience, a bigger audience than just sports media, because let's face it, whether you love Tom Brady or you hate him, he's bigger than the sport that he plays in terms of his popularity. And he's going to be. He's going to be news. He's in that category of a LeBron James or a Tiger Woods, or even so many years after his retirement, Michael Jordan. These guys transcend the game. They're bigger than the game that they play. And when they choose a venue to come out and to do this, it's pretty intense. You've seen usually either Howard Stern or Oprah is usually the vehicle by which they'll choose to open up. And I think Brady made the right move yesterday.
Well, and look, you know, given his age, he's obviously going to be 43. He's kind of right in the ballpark when it comes to that core of Howard Stern fans. I grew up listening to Howard. Like, again, I mean, I've been a big fan for, you know, as long as it's been on, it was on WA or whatever it was, WBCN back in the day, you know, when it first started, you know, being casted in Boston, I was able to pick it up. And then, of course, you watch the E! Show. You know, you're a kid and you watch the E! Show. It's the most entertaining thing in the world. But since then, you know, obviously I've been a fan. I've listened, I've subscribed to SiriusXM. And again, this was just the perfect mix. And he even talked about his, you know, his fandom of Howard. And look, we know Bill is a fan. Bill was on the Howard Stern Show, if you don't know, after, I believe, Super Bowl 38. I think that was the Super Bowl. He called in the morning after. It was kind of a surprise, actually. And he, you know, he came in, he talked to Howard. I'll have to try to find that if I can online. If there's a clip of that, I will try to tweet it out or whatever. But look, I mean, they're very similar in a lot of ways, and I think it was just a great thing. So before we spend the entire show talking about this, we did want to bring Kyle in because we started talking about the all-decade team. And again, Brady's part of that and his counterpart, Aaron Rodgers, which, again, Mike and I both said yesterday, this was an absolute no-brainer selection. There was a lot of, obviously, Drew Brees fans that came out of the woodwork to say, oh, what about Drew? Well, what about zero MVP, zero Super Bowl, zero this, zero that? It's like,
well, great. One Super Bowl.
Not in the decade, though. Not
oh, true. Yeah, you're right. Yes.
Not
right,
in the decade. Actually, yes. That was 2009. Yeah. So,
and I guess technically it was 2010, but we count that as part of the 2009
yeah,
season.
I mean, yeah, right. People you saying, whoa, 2010. It's like, no, it's the 2009 season. It's like when people say, oh, the Patriots won the Super Bowl the 2002 Super Bowl. No, this was 2001 season, guys. Just because it overlaps a month into it, it's the 2001 season. So again, yeah, you know, none of those accolades, you know, they'll sit there and say, oh, three straight 5,000-yard seasons. Well, also three straight 7-9 seasons, too. You know, you can't sit there and get excused for losing. And you know, we're seeing this quite a bit out of, you know, a lot of people, especially Drew Brees fans, Saints fans. You know, they're trying to elevate him to a level in which he's just not at right now. And I, you know, again, I'll sit there and argue to the death with all these people because, hey, that's what I do. And if you follow me on Twitter, you know that's what I do. So I guess I want to get your opinion on it. I think we all agree that the two quarterbacks that were represented are the only two choices, in my opinion. I mean, maybe you could throw in and potentially talk about Russell Wilson, but the lack of an MVP, I think, is what, you know, hurts his case because, again, he has a Super Bowl, he has a Super Bowl appearance, but he lacks that personal, that individual hardware that really, you know, would put him on the level of two guys that won two in this decade, which is obviously Brady and Aaron Rodgers. So, so yeah, Kyle, what are your thoughts on the all-decade team? Were there any omissions that really stood out to you or any problems that you had with it?
It's omission. It's not necessarily the omission of a player. It's how does this player make it? And it's, I can't even blame the voters because I think part of it is the way the system is set up. And it's the same thing with the all pros every year. It's that flex spot. I'm a fantasy guy. So I actually love it because I like what they're saying. Okay, instead of having to put a fullback there every year, mm-hmm. Is there really one that's that deserving? Like, I know Kyle Juszczyk is great, but does he really deserve to be on the All-Pro list every year? So I do like that. You can get some better representation. I just don't like, I don't think the voters should vote on the flex spot. I think it should go to, if you're just going to say running back, wide receiver, tight end, the highest vote getter of those positions who didn't make it in should be the flex spot. I think that's how it should be done for the All-Pro, because then what happens now is you get a guy who will make it at running back on the second team, but first team flex, and it's very confusing, and, you know, maybe I'm a bit more of this, like, oh, let everyone have a chance at it. But I think, you know, there's a lot of deserving players that could get on the list. And if they would just streamline this a bit better, you could get that extra player on that really that line. Like, and I'm thinking, you know, So I don't know how they voted for the flex spot, but to me, it probably was, they were probably instructed, okay, take a player who kind of fills in both a passing and receiving role and can kind of do everything. And then, you know, they vote Darren Sproles.
Yeah.
And, you know, Darren Sproles, good player and everything. And I know he made the all-team or all-decade punt returner, which is what he should have made only. Because, and I was talking to my friend, if I had to pick one player, I'd have said Jamal Charles, who is a great pass catcher as well as a running back. It's same thing with Le'Veon Bell. And I was talking to my best friend, Akili, and he said this really well. Is there any situation on the football field at any point in any game where you would rather have Darren Sproles on the field than Jamal Charles? Because I'm having a hard time thinking about that. If you didn't worry about injuries, I'd have Jamal Charles return punts. He's got that ability. Like kind of the speed ability earlier in his career, obviously. But so Darren Sproles being on there, really, I don't think he belongs. I honestly, everything else on offense is, I know we did our full press coverage all decade vote back in January. And honestly, all but one player that I voted for was represented. So I naturally think, yeah, I agree. Some pat on the back there. and honestly, the only player that I voted for that didn't make it was Mitchell Schwartz, because on our list, we actually specified left tackle, right tackle. Whereas here, they just named four left tackles. So that's really the only reason Schwartz didn't make it. But other than that, I guess I was in tuna. I was really happy to see Eric Weddle, because I think, Ian, you were mentioning I was the only person who voted Eric Weddle onto the all-decade team.
I believe so. I have piles of paper, and I have the results sitting somewhere, so I don't have it in front of me. But I remember having this conversation at the time. So, yeah, I believe you were one of the few, if any. I mean, maybe one other person, but I'm pretty sure it was just you.
Another pat on the back there for Eric Weddle, so I was happy to see that. My only other grievance isn't a player excluded. So I noticed there's seven unanimous selections. Tom Brady, who else? Adrian Peterson. And with four running backs, that actually makes sense that Adrian Peterson is unanimous. Joe Thomas, Marshall Yanda. I mean, some of the greatest at all time at their position. Aaron Donald, for only playing half a decade, easy choice. J.J. Watt, Von Miller. Luke Kuechly wasn't a unanimous choice. And I'm thinking that there's six linebacker spots. So at least one person filled out a ballot, put six other linebackers on, looked at it, didn't see Luke Kuechly's name and thought, yep, I'm submitting this.
Yeah.
That's, I don't know. Perhaps
they could be a Levante David fan. And if, obviously, now that I've, been following, obviously Tampa very closely, I guess if you want to talk about an omission, I mean, you can put side by side those two players, and I think Levante David is a very underrated player. And look, I mean, when you play down in Tampa without Tom Brady, you're pretty much that's what you are. You're going to be very underrated. I don't think a lot of people. I think a lot of people realize how good Mike Evans is, but I think he's really obviously going to jump off the map now because the spotlight is going to be more so on Tampa. And I think this is the case with the Levante David. So I'm not saying that's what happened, but yeah, that was kind of. It was kind of odd that, I felt like I don't even think Gronk was unanimous, and I feel like,
nope, that's true.
Yeah,
but so, only two tight ends, right? So I can kind of see that as being more reasonable. But there's six linebackers. How do you? I don't know. I found that really hard to believe.
Yeah,
that, again, like someone wasn't doing it just out of spite because they didn't like Kuechly or something. Like I know I'm not a baseball guy, but didn't Derek Jeter miss a unanimous Hall of Fame selection by one vote?
Well, yeah,
that just seemed petty to me. And this kind of seems like the same thing. I know all decade, not nearly as important as Hall of Fame, but then football way more important than baseball. But, I don't know. I was thinking pettiness. I guess the only other thing I could think of is if someone decided to go six outside linebackers, kind of saying, no, I prioritize pass rush, so I'm going to go with six outside linebackers in my spot. I could kind of understand that, but I think the voters made it clear there was three inside linebackers, three outside linebackers, and I don't necessarily know that they were instructed to do that. I think that's just the way people voted. I think that's kind of the mentality, right? I want a good, balanced all-decade team. So, again, I love the decade team. I love that Luke Kuechly's on there, which he should have been, but how he wasn't unanimous just baffled me.
Yeah, I agree. And, Mike, what do you think? Mike forgot to mute his mic.
No, I agree. No, I agree with Kyle as well. I think that Keekly was definitely, we mentioned Levante David on Tuesday here on Locked On, Tuesday. Oh. It's been a little bit of a rough morning, folks. Yeah. I apologize. But no, we mentioned that here on FBC Radio Live on Tuesday. We talked about Levante and his omission from this list. I happen to think that was a snub. And I think, Ian, I think you have a definite... interesting pathway to Keekly not being a unanimous decision. Look, I agree with Kyle. I think he should have been. You take a look at the body of work throughout the course of the decade, and he deserves to be on there just as much as anyone else. And the amount of linebackers that exist on this team, to me, speaks volumes about the fact that you probably could have worked him in there as a unanimous decision. I don't necessarily think that somebody looked at this and thought he's not deserving. It was probably either if it was a glaring omission, it was a very bad glaring omission. But if it was an intentional omission, it does make sense. To me, that's the only way to make sense out of it. We kind of went into this a little bit on Tuesday, but I agree with most of what was submitted. I mean, it's hard to argue with a lot of the names that were submitted and were chosen on this list. I really like Kyle's argument on the flex position, because to be honest with you, it's not something I had put a lot of thought into, and I apologize for that. I probably should have put more thought into that than I did, but the flex position, to me, when I saw Sproles' name, I'm thinking of the body of work, and I'm thinking of what he was able to do, the selection as the returner, so I'm not really thinking of it in terms of, oh, well, you know, I really don't agree with that, but when he mentioned Jamaal Charles, all of a sudden, like, a light bulb went off in my head, and I'm like, yeah, you know what, if I had the choice, and your friend asked the question, I think very eloquently, Kyle, would you want Darren Sproles or Jamaal Charles on the field? And if you take injuries out of the equation, I think a lot of people forget how great JC was in that offense and how feared he was mm-hmm. of a player every single time that the Kansas City Chiefs took the field back in that decade. So, yeah, I think you've definitely opened my mind and my eye, and I agree with you on that. And that's not something I had thought of a whole lot more before this morning.
No, and I think, you know, again, people forget because, again, we have to go back to the 2010 season. And, you know, that season, the Packers won the Super Bowl. That's the year that we're as far as we're going back. So there's been a lot of players that have come and gone since then. A lot of our minds are stuck in the last few years. So, you know, the name Jamaal Charles, you don't even think about, because when you say, oh, Kansas City linebacker, Kansas City running back, you think, okay, Kareem Hunt, you know, obviously he's with the Browns now, but you think, oh, yeah, that's right, Kareem Hunt, you know, and then obviously Damian Williams, all that, but Jamaal Charles was there before that, you know, and you know, Larry Johnson before him, but that was, you know, the previous decade. But yeah, Jamaal Charles was fantastic, and again, he, you know, It kind of defined this decade because, again, offenses have evolved. It's not so, you know, black and white in terms of, okay, this is how a lot of teams run offenses. These are the type of play. No, they utilize players in a different way. So to be able to add a flex position, so to speak, to the all-decade team is important because, again, it helps better represent what these offenses are. And, again, I'm with Kyle where it's like you should just take the guy that's tight end, running back, wide receiver that, you know, got the most votes but didn't get voted in. And because, again, that just represents just how many of these skilled players are used and utilized throughout, you know, all these teams now. It's not just a basic, you know, type of formations. There's a lot of different trickiness to it. So, but I'm assuming Saints fans will tell you that Taysom Hill probably deserved to be on there, and they'll fight to the death because of it, because he's thrown 15 passes this decade, and that's just how they act. So, so real quick, and we only have a couple minutes left here. There was an article that came out, or I believe Adam Schefter tweeted an article, and the prognostication was that the NFL, or in California, they were going to be unable to host any sort of sporting event at the very earliest until Thanksgiving, which, again, that you know, tells you right then and there that, well, that's a very that's a very damning thing to hear if you're a football fan. Now, again, we're not saying this is true. There's been a lot of projections. We heard at points yesterday that things started to settle down, and then it's this and it's that. So we really don't know. These are just projections that I think are being made out of an abundance of caution. But if it is true that the NFL season will not be able to be played at least until Thanksgiving, we may be looking at just a a year or so of just upside down sports leagues when it comes to in season play, something that we're not used to. I mean, we're going to see NFL, because again, the NFL will play a full season. Damned if they do. They will find a way to play a full season. If it means starting it in Thanksgiving and running through March into April, they will do that. They will adjust accordingly and they will make adjustments. But again, we're talking about just leagues being turned upside down. So I'm not saying that it's going to happen. I mean, it's such a long ways away. I'm still obviously very hopeful and trying to stay positive that, you know, the NFL season will start on time. But, you know, real quick, what are you guys' impression? I'll start with you, Kyle. Just, you know, your thoughts on it and what do you think the NFL could do? If that's the case.
My initial instinct was, oh, Thanksgiving, okay. Mid-October is not bad. Oh, wait, American Thanksgiving, not Canadian Thanksgiving. That's November. That's end of November. Oh,
yeah.
But if that's what it takes to make things safe, now I'm definitely on team. You know, if you can get things sooner and play without fans, I'm all for it. Mm-hmm. And I honestly think most fans will be okay with that. They won't have the experience of going to the game, but I think most people just want to watch live sports. Mm-hmm. There's only so many old curling games you can watch. Although I still have a list of a few that I want to get to, but and old Super Bowls or whatever, like, you know, I mean, the internet's great for that. There's tons of access to old games, classic games, but we want that live sports mm-hmm. action. And I think people will take it even if there aren't fans in the stands. So, you know, if that's what it takes, maybe you're right. Maybe 16 it fits there. They're probably flexible enough with the Super Bowl that they can extend it a few weeks. I know they don't necessarily like to do that, but I know they have kind of emergency protocols that if they need to extend it a week, for whatever reason, they kind of can. But a couple months is that could get logistically tricky. But I'm sure, like you said, I'm sure if there's a way, the NFL will find a way.
Well, fortunately, having the Super Bowl down in Tampa, I think they can adjust. And I'm sure Tampa doesn't want to lose their second major event in a calendar year because, of course, WrestleMania was supposed to be here last weekend. They did not do that. Obviously, the Super Bowl is supposed to be down here in Tampa next year. So I'm assuming that they really want to have that game played. And we saw this back in September of 2001 where they did push everything back a week. Again, that was just a week, not potentially a 2 months. So, Mike, real quick, what are your thoughts?
Agreed. I think that they definitely will do everything they can to get these games in. The NFL is about bottom line, folks. I don't know. Maybe that rubs people the wrong way when I say that, but ultimately that's their main cause. And if there's a chance, if there's a medical and legal chance that they're going to be able to get these games in, I think they do anything they can to find the way to do it. The question is whether or not the circumstances of the world in which we live are going to cooperate, because ultimately, if there's any type of legal or medical restrictions from doing that, even the almighty NFL will not be able to push that through. So keep mm-hmm. a sharp eye, folks. It's going to be interesting to see.
Yeah, like I said, we're just going to have to watch and play it by ear and see how it goes. So, Kyle, thank you so much once again for joining us. We always have fun. And it was for folks that like Aaron Rodgers and folks that like Tom Brady, we have a good relationship and we could talk very positively about one another when it comes to that. Now, again, if you want to sit here and say, you know, 3 versus 4, well, you know, we'll save that for another show where we can really get into it and maybe we'll put a rated R rating on this program and really get into it that way. But until then, we're going to have to say goodbye today. We will be back tomorrow. It'll be Friday. And, you know, who knows what we're going to talk about. So I hardly ever know, you know, about 20 minutes before the show goes on. So we will figure it out. But until then, give the show a follow. It's at FPC Radio Live. Follow Kyle. It's at NYAMA_KS. And, of course, you can follow me on Twitter. It's at IGLEN31. And Mike is at MDABATEFPC. Folks, have a great day, and we will talk tomorrow.